We're talking about meat today on the program. The Japanese, of course, are known for their love of beef that's marbled with fat. They're prepared to pay a hefty premium for it. But this wasn't always the way. For a long time, the average Japanese household couldn't afford to eat beef. That changed after the war as Japan's economy took off. Riding the crest of the wave was Australia's beef industry, or more specifically, the feedlot sector. There's a new book out. It's titled Grain Fed, and it charts the history of feedlots. And the author is John Condon. Welcome back to the program. John, nice to have you along.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Cameron.
What's a feedlot?
Well, feedlot basically is a gathering point for cattle to spend the final short period of their lives to add weight and add condition to cattle to ensure that they're a consistent and a premium eating quality product.
Okay, so this is cattle that they may have spent a lot of time on pasture and for the last, what, few weeks of their life get fed on grain?
Oh, look, the time spent in a feedlot varies, but it's important to point out that feedlot or grain-fed cattle only spend a very small period of their full life in a feedlot. Typically, it can be anything from 70 to 100 to 120 days. So it's really just to give them that nutritional boost in that very final stage of their life to ensure that they produce a premium eating quality product.
Okay. When we talk about feedlot operators, the people that own and run them, is it your mum and dad farmer types or is it big business?
It's interesting. There's a real dichotomy of business models within the feedlot sector within this country, and there are feedlots in basically every state of Australia bar the Northern Territory because there's no grain produced up there, but they range from feedlots of 100 head capacity, so a mar and par scale operation, right through to very professionally run, very large enterprises that run up to 50,000 cattle. So there's a broad spectrum of business types.
Okay, so there is big and small. I guess the popular image is of something quite extensive, or intensive, I should say, really, shouldn't I? Something, a lot of animals, a lot of head of cattle in a relatively small space.
Well, they are kept in a reasonably confined space, but your listeners shouldn't get too confused with what we would call intensive feeding. I mean, the typical feedlot pens, or not typical, but all feedlot pens, allow enough space for cattle to freely roam. In fact, they can gallop around those pens if they so wish, and often they do so. So they're not confined in any real way. So in real terms, it's quite an idyllic environment for cattle to spend the last period of their life.
Okay, you're hearing here from John Condon, who's the author of a new book titled Grain Fed, that charts the history of feedlots. Also with me is Robin Hart. Robin's a pioneer of the industry on Queensland's Darling Downs. Robin, welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning, Cameron, thank you.
You got into feedlotting, quite a long time ago now. What got you into it?
Yes, I wasn't the earliest, but it was back in 1963. And at that stage, we were crop fattening steers that we were growing and breeding up in the Burnett district west of Bundaberg. We'd bring them down to the Darling Downs and finish them on crop, but Australian conditions being what they are, crops would often fail. And our first step into feedlotting was to say, all right, let's put a convenient feeding system up here and we can finish the cattle and market them accordingly. And that's how it started, but of course it wasn't long after that that we made our entry into the Japanese market and saw, you know, their desire for quality and how you could improve on the eating quality of an animal by certain feeding regimes.
Okay, so initially the idea was bring the feed to the cattle instead of vice versa?
Yes, you do, cattle out in vast pasture areas do a lot of walking each day between water and the pasture that they're actually grazing on. So you're putting them in a smallish yard, but as John said, they're not confined, really. They do have, in our case, you know, something like 22 square metres. It's quite a large area. And but therein is the nutritional feed supplied, the water supplied, it's kept cool, and you provide them with shade in your confinement, and the animals have a pretty happy time there.
So how is it, the end product, the steak that gets eaten, how is it different if it's fed on grain in a feedlot versus pasture fed?
It's an interesting question because, and it does depend on how long you do feed them and the type of nutrition you give them, and a lot depends on the actual breed of the animal. So it's not an easy thing to answer, but in our case, we're feeding cattle for quite a long time. Because we're a smaller direct marketing type company, we're just a family operation. But for years we've been seeking out markets that want that special product, and we'll feed it to suit the product that the consumer wants. So, you know, we're being led down the track of feeding cattle longer and feeding different breeds of cattle in this longer feeding period to produce the meat quality that they're looking for, the fat colour they're looking for, and the marbling, which is the most important thing. That's that fat that's instilled inside the muscle, and it adds to the eating quality of the product.
John, how important is this element of the industry to the overall picture in Australia's cattle industry, beef industry?
Cameron, I think the last 2 years demonstrates that. I mean, Australia has come through the most horrific, or Eastern Australia at least, the most horrific 2 years of drought in living memory for a lot of people. And feedlots have, under those circumstances, have played an absolutely critical role in maintaining that consistency both of supply and of quality. Without the feedlot sector in the last 2 years, the Australian industry would have been... they would have been in more strife than the early settlers. So it's in periods like this that feedlots really come into their own. But but even in good years, the feedlots still play an absolutely critical role in supplying a consistent product. I mean, there's about 25% of all cattle that processed in Australia pass through a feedlot. And if you break that down into the steer and heifer portion, it's in fact more than a third. So it's a very significant part, and it's the high value quality end of the market as well.
But if Robin was one of the early adopters of this approach in the 1960s, we've had droughts obviously before that. What happened before there were feedlots?
Well, there really wasn't the market demand prior to that. The Australian market, prior to the emergence of the Japanese market in the 1970s, and then perhaps even more extensively in the 1990s after market liberalisation, we relied initially beyond the domestic Australian domestic market on the UK, and there was no real quality parameters or attachments to the product that was sent. As long as it was heavy and it was meat and it was fresh, frozen, well, you know, they were happy with it. But it's really been the emergence of the Japanese and North Asian markets that have really driven that emphasis on the quality end of the beef trade.
Okay. The early days, John, did people get it wrong?
Look, it was fly-by-the-seat-of-the-pants stuff. I mean, people of Robin's era and even earlier, I mean, there are feedlots, and it's documented in the book, that trace back to the 1940s and 50s. And so they were really going by feel. And, you know, a lot of it was instinctive. There was a little bit of evidence of information coming out of the US to help the local industry. But a lot of what was done here in terms of the pioneering era in lot-feeding cattle was very much done on instinct. And sure, they got things wrong. But if you look back at the feedlots that are still in existence today that were built in those early years, they also got an awful lot right. So, you know, they trusted their instincts in areas like the way cattle were managed and the pen layouts and how the nutritional requirements of cattle. So, you know, I think looking back, I think they did remarkably well to get it as close to the bullseye as they did.
Had you come across a few horror stories of getting the feed wrong?
Oh, look, absolutely. Trial and error was part of where the industry came from. There was one interesting episode back in the 70s where an early pioneer feedlot had a neighbour who was experimenting with an ethanol distillery to produce an ethanol for industrial purposes, and he had access to the residual material left over called wet distiller's grain. So his neighbour delivered the first consignment of this material to his feedlot, and they'd done some calculations based on what they thought the alcohol content of this product might be when it was fed. Unfortunately, they put the decimal point in the wrong place. Instead of it being 0.5% alcohol, it was actually 5% alcohol. And the first load of feed went into the bunk. And, of course, with predictable results, within an hour or two, cattle were wandering around the pens, bumping into posts and falling over. And I mean, it didn't do them any long-lasting harm. I'm sure some of them woke up with a hangover the next day. But, you know, it's part of the trial and error process that the industry had to go through.
Yeah, getting the cows drunk along the way by mistake. John, what's the writing this book? Now, I know you're a beef man. You're interested in the industry. But what's the value in telling this story? Why should people want to know about Australia's feedlot history?
You know, I think more than anything else, Cameron, I think it's a story about people and perseverance and resourcefulness and application. And, you know, a lot of the older pioneers of Robin's era and even earlier, they're getting on in years, and it was important to capture some of the sentiment that was and the spirit that was floating around in those early eras. And fortunately, we were able to access most of the early pioneers of the industry and capture some of that spirit in written form.
Mm. This is a sector that's getting more scrutiny now about the environmental impact and the merits of feeding grain to animals. What sort of future do you feel it has?
Oh, I think the grain-fed sector has a very strong future. The fundamentals that make the grain-fed sector a success today, I don't think will ever change. Australia continues to be the driest continent on Earth with the most erratic rainfall. We face enormous challenges in terms of beef production in this country. And equally, there will also be high demand from a growing band of international markets, including China and Europe and the Middle East and other emerging markets for a high quality, consistent product. So in my opinion, those fundamentals that make the grain-fed sector successful today will always be there.
Mm. All right, John, all the best with things. Thanks for coming in today. Always nice to have you along. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
John Condon, who's the author of Grain-Fed. You also heard earlier from Robin Hart, who's one of the pioneers of the feedlot industry.